Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us on Queensberry Rules Radio once again. I am Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com. I will be joined shortly, of course, by James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. And today we are welcoming back Corey Erdman, analyst for the Fight Network and also a contributor to a little magazine called Rain Magazine. So it should be a fun day. We've had him on the show before. It was a good time. And today we get to talk a lot of crap about a lot of stuff, which we pretty much always do. So it should be a fun one today. But I will go ahead and get started without these losers. Let's go ahead and open it up with this ridiculosity that happened on HBO over the weekend, which was Brandon Rios versus Diego Chavez. A little bit of a travesty, needless to say. It was just not what we would expect, or at least not what we'd hoped for the card going in. Well, the card in general. I was actually just a couple minutes ago on we were taping for Corey Erdman's show on, I think, Sirius, and basically I had said that the card from top to bottom was just weird. I think that that's probably the best way to describe it overall. I mean, there were things that happened that were, I mean, the card overall, the interviews, the from top to bottom was just really strange, and it was a serious pain in the ass to have to once again go through a card from top to bottom and have the officiating be kind of lame. And why? Speaking of why, James Foley.
Sir, I am here.
Thank goodness.
I'm ready.
Man, today we got some top men on the show.
Top men.
Oh, so open up to me about this Rios Chavez incident. Open up.
Well, I thought it was really just preposterous, man, to disqualify him. I mean, I saw the replays. I mean, I think, yeah, he probably did thumb him in the eye a little bit, and it's kind of a flagrant defense. But, you know, I mean, I think the bigger problem is that Draculus just fucking completely lost control of the fight, started handing out penalties early for no real reason, and it just got ugly, and he let those guys basically, especially Rios, just, you know, I mean, I think he disqualified him only because Rios was yelling about it. I don't think he even knew what happened. So it's too bad. I mean, I really wanted to see the last, you know, couple rounds of that fight, and yeah, I just thought Draculus completely, you know, imposed himself on the proceeding and, you know, kind of, you know, deprived us of a satisfying conclusion, as well as the fighters.
He definitely screwed the pooch, as they say. And I mean, it ain't the first time that he's really screwed up a call. I mean, oh, man.
Yeah. Well, he's officially gone from just, you know, another John Kerry imposter to definitely one of the worst refs in the business now, you know? I mean, that's all it really takes. He's never really been great. He wasn't, you know, really huge on my radar when you think about all the bad and incompetent referees out there. But I think this was just really bad handling of that. And especially in light of, you know, the previous fight on the card, the Vargas-Novikov fight, those scorecards were pretty absurd, right, compared to what I thought I had seen. So, you know, you already kind of had a feeling that there was a bias for the name fighter, the American guy, the top-ranked guy. And then, you know, Rios gets a pretty favorable – I mean, the cards in the Rios fight were fine, but he gets kind of a favorable, you know, official ruling. So it was all kind of hard to swallow. I mean, I just really wanted to see what would have happened those last couple of rounds. I mean, I thought it was a good fight. It was a sloppy fight at times, a little ugly. There was a lot of punches traded, and, you know, I think it just was horrible. I couldn't believe that he stopped it.
sorry to interrupt you, but I was just going to go ahead and patch through Mr. Corey Erdman. Corey, it is going well. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. Everyone can hear me okay? Is this going to be all right?
Man, I can barely hear you. Is that just me or?
It's a little quiet.
I'm going to call right back. I'll call you a different line.
Okay. He said he was going to call back from a different line, I think. But, sorry.
Okay, weird. I didn't hear anything.
I could barely hear
ladies
him.
And, ladies and gentlemen,
event,
Corey Erdman.
Yeah, he'll be calling back in a second. But in any event, yes, to pretty much continue with what you were saying, it was the entire card. What I was saying right actually when you had come on was the entire card from top to bottom was just kind of strange, like, In every little nook and cranny of like the card, from the post fight interviews to like the kind of pre fight segments to, you know, Kellerman's call, everything was just kind of like, what the fuck is going on right now, man? It seemed really weird, and I know that they were like celebrating the like 300th whatever, and I was just like, what the fuck, dude? This is fucking weird.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that interview, we'll talk about that later, but, you know, the Kovalev.
Yeah.
You know, uncomfortable, almost. But, yeah, you know, the other thing I noticed is, like, I mean, I really prefer, I think Lampley is a much better interviewer than Kellerman is as far as getting the fighters after the fight. I don't know what it is, but I just think that he, you know, I mean, I almost, and I think the fighters approach him differently, too. You know, so
I did enjoy the
Rios post-fight interview and that they brought over Chavez. And, you know, a lot of times you see those situations and Chavez probably had every right to be so – I wasn't even sure if he would do an interview. You know, I figured he might just storm off. And but it was good to see, you know. I was perfectly content with, you know, aside from the refereeing and the judging.
The action itself was, you know – it was not. It was respectable, you know. Especially the Vargas, Vargas Novikov fight was pretty solid. It sounded like you kind of like went out there for a second. But here, let me see if that's Corey. Corey.
It is Corey. I'm in a different area code now. Can you hear me?
Yes, we. You sound great.
Perfect.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling back and welcome back. We were in the midst of totally trashing Vic Draculich. So,
oh, perfect. Okay, well, that's what I called
in
for. Good. All right, so please continue.
Well, I mean, basically, we haven't even really gotten much to the action yet, but that's partially what we were talking about, which was, you know, the action itself was solid. It was solid in Rios Chavez, that is. It was a pretty solid back-and-forth fight when there was a fight, but the mugging got to be a bit much on both sides, I thought. I thought that both guys were being rough, let's put it that way. You know, you can say they were dirty, whatever, crafty, whatever you want to call it, but they were being rough. It was that Vic Draculich seemed totally unable to get a hold of the action, and that kind of seems to be where the fight deteriorated. You know, would you agree that the officiating was a big part of it?
No question. And you know, everyone has kind of talked about this at length as to how Draculich has had a history of either involving himself too much in fights or waiting too long to involve himself in a fight. But, I there were points when he could certainly rein it in. It was a tough task regardless because, obviously, you know, Chavez in particular was looking to bend the rules beyond what you would normally see in the way of rough stuff on the inside. So he had a tough task regardless, but he really didn't do anything with it. And I think Draculich decided earlier on in the fight that I just can't handle this tonight. And he seemed to have that attitude the whole way through because, you know, we saw him deduct points from both fighters before warnings, and he was sort of just reacting to things that were going on and almost reacting emotionally to things that were going on in the fight, and that can't be his role. He has to be able to be calm and in control, and clearly the fighters, their behavior was reflecting the attitude of the referee in this case. So, as you just said, this is a fight that had great action in spots, And I think I said this to you a moment ago when we were recording this, something for my show as well, but I can't remember a fight quite like this where we had fight of the year caliber action in spots, but I really didn't enjoy the fight at all. I'll never go back and watch this fight ever again in my life. It was not enjoyable, and a big part of that was because of Victor Akulich.
Come on, James Foley. Jump in. Let's fucking kick Victor Akulich while he's down. Yeah, he was kind of cutting out a little bit earlier, so that might be what it is again, but Oh, my bad. It looks like he had to call back in. Maybe that's why he's not answering. James.
That could be why.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yes, sir. What's your take?
Totally silent.
I was talking earlier, and then I just, like, heard nothing in response, and I thought I probably got disconnected or something.
Huh, weird.
So I didn't hold there. Yeah. It's too bad. I had a lot of brilliant insights. But, you know, Corey, would you go back and rewatch, if you had to do like a who wins Diego Chavez versus Midget Walgast, would you watch this fight to kind of scout?
I mean, that's the only way. I mean, because I think that the way to really get Twitter followers these days is both to tell people when your latest is coming out, first and foremost, but more importantly than that, to live tweet fights that have happened more than 50 years ago.
Yeah, well, only I mean, we've all looked at, you know, the trends. I mean, the My Latest hashtag is one of the more popular. I mean, it seems like a lot of people just go to that first thing in the morning, so it does help to put your stuff out there.
Well, I might add a caveat to that, if I may, and that I might rewatch it if I were doing, like, for example, a top, like, 23 fights that Vic Dracula's fucked up with his officiating list. But, you know, that's kind of neither here nor there.
Right, yeah. You know, Omar Nino, Rodel Mayol, and then this one, and then, you know, any number of them that he's officiated recently. He's been getting worse over the years.
Although, you know, Foley said that he was a bit of a John Kerry impersonator. However, I do have to throw something out there. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Army of Darkness, but when he goes into the barn and his face is getting stretched, that is Vic Draculich. That is his face. Go ahead and look at it again, and you'll thank me. Anyway, he's a horrible
actor. Is it more exciting than Rio Chavez? Because I'll go watch that instead.
I'd have to say so, yeah.
Okay.
I'd have to say so, in less nonsense, that's for sure. I mean, well, so like kind of pointing towards the horizon a little bit, Mr. Ernan, would you say that this Vic Draculich situation here, I think that it's pretty much agreed upon by not just us three here, but a lot of us, that Vic Draculich is just not a very good referee, or at the very least, he consistently turns in subpar performances. Why is he getting jobs, and does this point to a larger problem in boxing with officiating?
Well, I don't think there's any question that points to a larger problem in boxing, and we only need to look at the, you know, his boss's response and reply to how things were handled in the ring. I mean, the response from the Nevada State Athletic Commission was comical. I mean, to say that the referee, you know, received a tip from the corner that Rios was being gouged in the eye, and he basically took it at face value, and they thought that that was an acceptable thing to act upon, you know, like a pro wrestling referee. You know, if a guy pulls like a chain out of his trunks and claims that his opponent hit him with it, I mean, that's who he's dealing with. And, you know, we've heard for years, too, how Draculich has very close ties to everything that's going on in Nevada. He's a lawyer there. You know, he comes from money. I mean, nothing's going to happen to Vic Draculich. They apparently were very satisfied with what Draculich did. They saw no problem with any of the deductions, and they were fine with his lack of reasoning for disqualification, even though, in hindsight, it was justified. He didn't know why he was doing it. So the problem is obviously very widespread, and we saw it just based on their response.
Yeah, it was
yes, a problem.
Well, and I've read, and I don't know how true this is, but I read in an article that Draculich was disbarred as an attorney in the state, but I don't know how true that was. It was just kind of a third, you know, party information type of thing that I read. But in any event,
just put it out there to fame his reputation anyway.
Of course, yeah. Well, I'll throw it out there anyway. I don't give a shit. Come on, we're bloggers, dude. Nobody believes us.
I also heard he was dishonorably discharged from the military when he was younger, too. But
well, I heard that he was on a Swift boat and that he totally just draft dodged. That's what I heard. But, well, speaking of John fucking Kerry. Anyway, well, regardless, it kind of seems a little bit similar to the situation with Dick Cole in Texas, with the Texas Commission being involved in their insurance and the insurance that's provided on fight cards. And, I mean, it's this big, like, it's this situation that's kind of like a conflict of interest in both cases. It's open. People know about it. Nothing gets done. What the hell?
No. I mean, yeah. And that's boxing in general. I mean, there was earlier on today, there was kind of the debate that breaks out every couple of days about how can we fix boxing and whatnot. Well, I mean, just in general, if you want the answer to that, it can't possibly be fixed because it's the wild, wild west of capitalism, basically. And there are so many entities that could be involved and so much, incest, basically, between all of the organizations that make the decisions that protect fighters or make anything happen. Of course, I mean, this is not shocking. I mean, nothing is ever going to come of this. And I bet you next week, if we do this show again, we will have a judging or an officiating problem that we're going to complain about, and nothing's ever going to happen.
All right, well, I know that you kind of have a somewhat limited amount of time on the show, so speaking of incest, I wanted to go ahead and get the survey. Sergey Kovalev's win over Blake Caparillo. How's that for a segue? basically, there's no question, Sergey Kovalev, big hitter, destroyer type of guy. My question to both of you guys is Sergey Kovalev, have we seen enough of his skills, I'd have to say? Corey, have we seen enough of his skills?
I don't think there's any way that we could have. I mean, no one's really tested him in any way. I mean, I guess Cedric Agnew would have come the closest. And really all he did was manage to keep his distance from Kovalev for a good portion of that fight. But we have no idea how he'd fare against the other, top light heavyweights. But then again, I mean, who is there out there to actually test him? I mean, really, those names are Adonis Stevenson and Bernard Hopkins, because more or less anyone else in that top 10 even probably isn't going to be all that competitive with him either. I mean, no matter who you want to throw in there with him, even a guy like Chad Dawson who has chin issues, or Tavoris Cloud who's looked shot, you look up and down that top 10 and it's very, very weak. So, have we seen enough of his skills? I mean, in comparison to who he's actually going to be fighting, yes, we have. We know that he's one of the three best in the world. That's all I guess we really need to know. Anything else is just debating something that doesn't actually matter, because there's no one else out there that's going to test him other than the guy that he's about to fight and the guy that apparently, they don't want to fight each other for whatever reason.
And then, that being said, well, how about I shift it slightly towards what do you think is going to happen against Bernard Hopkins?
James, you want to jump in there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Patrick, you asked about the Hopkins fight?
Yeah.
I agree with Corey. I guess it's like you always kind of like to see a fighter face some adversity because so you know how he will handle that, and Kovalev really hasn't. I mean, I guess, he was knocked down in this fight, but it was obviously a flash knockdown, and he wasn't really hurt, and Caparillo doesn't really have much power, so it's not, he was never really going to be seriously threatened by an opponent like that. And we saw him with two of the top 10 guys, with Campillo when they fought, and with Nathan Cleverley, and he destroyed both of them. So, yeah, it's basically what's left is Stevenson and Hopkins. And, personally, I mean, I'm picking Kovalev to win that fight big. I mean, I know that Hopkins is a real trendy pick. I know he's an all-time great fighter, but he's 50 years old. I do think that maybe people are romanticizing. I mean, those Jean Pascal fights were not blowouts. They were close fights. He was, outboxed in a really dreadful fight against Chad Dawson. He hasn't fought marquee opponents since then. I mean, I was impressed by his win over Tavoris Cloud. Yeah, but again, that was like another 7-5, 8-4 type of fight. And I think that, I just think Kovalev is a lot better than anybody he's fought going back a long, long time. And I think with Hopkins' age, with his style, I just think he's going to be at a big disadvantage, and he's going to find himself in there with a young guy who can box. And as long as Kovalev doesn't get psyched out and you know, really reduce his activity rate, I just think he's got enough to win that fight and possibly be the first guy to stop Hopkins. I mean, it can't go on forever. You know, I know he's special, but I think he's biting off more than he can chew. And, I mean, there's opinions all over the map, but I actually think that Kovalev's a tougher fight for Hopkins than Stevenson would have been. And I think Stevenson might be a little more skilled, but I also think because of his tendency to box, he would be more likely to kind of play into Hopkins' hands as far as the style goes. If Kovalev comes out there, a similar style with that kind of predatory feeling out in the first round and then just going after him after that, I just don't think Hopkins is going to be able to handle it. I mean, a big part of that, a huge part of that, of course, is Hopkins' age, his diminished speed, and I believe reflexes as well. I mean, you know, he's 49 years old. So I think Kovalev is going to win this fight big.
And, you know, let's not forget that Pascal dropped Hopkins as well and probably isn't as big of a puncher as Kovalev is as well. And I agree with you. I think that Kovalev, at least just on paper, stylistically, based on what we've seen him do and what his instincts are in the ring, probably better suited for the task to beat Bernard Hopkins right now. I think Adonis would have to change some things that he does instinctively. As you were saying, his instincts are still to fight at range. For Kovalev, we at least think that he is, you know, a pressure fighter and whatnot, but we'll see against a guy like Hopkins who, you know, should be durable enough to take him into deep waters here. Is he going to be able to keep it up? Because right now, you know, what we've seen out of Kovalev is that he hunts guys down. As soon as he gets them out of there right away. What's going to happen if he doesn't get Hopkins out of the way? Does he get discouraged then? If he's taken into the 10th, 11th round and Hopkins still hasn't gone anywhere, does his game plan change? Does his volume dip down? We're going to find those things out, and we have no way of knowing because we have nothing to base this on whatsoever because he steamrolled through everybody as a professional.
Well, I think the strongest confidence booster for a Hopkins fan, or if you're trying to make a case that he is going to win, is the fact that he's taking the fight. You know, I mean, Hopkins is obviously an incredibly smart, savvy guy, and so he sees something that he obviously believes he can win, and I think that should give people confidence. But, you know, everything on paper, everything that they've done in the last couple years, to me, suggests that Kovalev is going to have a huge night.
You know, I think that at the very least, if you're going, you know, minimum here, it's an interesting fight because there are a lot of different, I mean, there's always variables in fights, but in this one, there's a few different important angles. You know, at some point, Hopkins' age is going to show. At some point, it's going to be too much, you know, but then there's also the, all right, well, he just keeps hanging on. I mean, I'm getting kind of sick of betting against him. I'm getting kind of sick of picking him to lose this time or something, you know, and just being totally wrong and made to look like an idiot because he turns out some type of horrible performance that winds up being, you know, effective. So I'm kind of, you know, as a Kovalev fan or whatever, I'm kind of concerned in that regard that, you know, Hopkins might be able to maybe intimidate him before the fight or make him kind of trick him into fighting a way that he doesn't usually fight. On the other hand, I also feel as though that at, you know, 50 years old, Bernard Hopkins is not going to be able to handle somebody who can keep a stiff output, but also have a lot of punching power. I'm not entirely sure that he's going to be able to handle that all that well because, needless to say, he likes to slow the pace down as much as possible, you know, make it as, you know, and as ugly and kind of just drudgy as a fight as possible. So there's a couple different ways that it can be seen, although I tend to kind of lean towards what James is saying in that I think Kovalev is going to come out there kind of pissed and kind of looking to prove a point. And if that's the case, Hopkins is going to be in for a pretty long night if he's really going to last the distance.
But listen, what's really important here, guys, is that this is for the fans. This is Golden Boy Promotions showing you that they care about the fans, that they will work for HBO, they'll work with HBO, they'll work with Main Events, they'll work with anybody. Oscar De La Hoya is the fans' promoter.
I buy it.
I mean, I'm just fanning myself with disbelief.
Well, the thing about Hopkins that's like so fascinating is of all the main fighters, I mean, it's like the guy, he gets up for a fight, you know, he rises to the occasion time and time again, and I mean, he's basically been at least competitive with every single fighter he's fought, you know, I mean, even from the Chad Dawson fight to the Roy Jones fight, I mean, none of them were blowouts. You know, he may have clearly lost a couple times, but he never has been humiliated, never been, you know, swept. He's never been knocked out or come close to that. So, I mean, he has a way of getting up for these big fights and oftentimes winning them. But I just, you know, eventually, I mean, as much as we want to romanticize the guy, I do think some of the big wins in recent years have been more limited opponents than what he's going to be dealing with Kovalev. And, you know, it's just, you can't, I mean, the man is almost 50 years old. If he beats Kovalev, I don't know. I mean, then it pretty much will destroy my faith in everything.
Well, it'll destroy, you know, my faith or anyone's faith in the talent level in boxing right now. I mean, you could argue, people like to argue all the time about whether fighters are better today than they were before or vice versa, but if a 50-year-old guy is cleaning out this consensus killer in the light heavyweight division, I mean, what does that say about about the modern training about fighters right now, that a guy just with, you know, some guile and some know-how is able to tame every single fighter in the division.
Man, well, it's a tough pill to swallow because, you know, on one hand, I like I said earlier, I totally understand that what Bernard Hopkins does is effective. He's very intelligent about it. You know, his approach it's very minimalist, I think, but at the same time, he does what he has to do to win, and he generally does, but at the same time, you know, it's really difficult for me to want to see more of it and to kind of root him on and be like, oh man, and on top of that, it's also difficult for me to keep my trap shut when he beats someone like a Tavoris Cloud and it's like, oh shit, Bernard Hopkins is back. Oh my God, he's 49 and beating guys like Tavoris Cloud. Come on. You know, I mean, Tavoris Cloud had a pretty rough night with Glenn Johnson just a few years ago. So let's, you know, be realistic about some of that stuff. But even then, yes, at 50, it's impressive. I just don't really want to see it all that much anymore.
Speaking of things I don't want to see, I will say this. Recent history is in his favor because in 2014, fighters are 1-0 after posing butt-ass naked. Roy Jones sends out dick pics and he beats Courtney Fry, and now Bernard Hopkins in theory should beat Sergey Kovalev because he posed stark naked for that magazine.
That's an incredible point that I didn't even think about, and now I'm depressed. Thank you.
Well, we also have to confirm some of those numbers with our official naked fighter statistician, James Bank Jr., because there may have been other pictures that we weren't aware of.
You forgot to mention that sponsored by Ultimate Sack. We're obligated, contractually obligated to say that. Let's pause for now.
You know,
I'm kidding. So
Hopkins, you got to respect what he's able to do. I mean, there's no question about it. And he's definitely special, and he's an all-time great. Even, you know, if you don't like his style, at times he, you know, straddles the line between what's legal and what's not legal, whatever. But I don't think, you know, any fighter of that generation has, maybe with the exception of Mayweather, has been that competitive and that driven to win time and time again, and also that, you know, upset when it hasn't gone his way. So, I mean, the guy, he's a special dude, but like you said, you know, it's like at a certain point, the nostalgia factor and the rooting for the underdog and the old guy, you know, you want to see great fighters emerge from the younger generation because that's what's going to drive the sport. And, if he beats a guy like Kovalev, who we've all kind of gotten on the bandwagon, I don't think Kovalev's as good as a Golovkin, but, I mean, I think he's potentially a really, you know, exciting, great fighter. I mean, he already is exciting, but he's got potential, to me, to become a great fighter. If he can get those big fights, if he can eventually fight Stevenson, if a guy like Ward comes up, who knows? He'll be right in that mix. You know, and he loses to Hopkins. Hopkins is not the future of the sport. So, yeah, it does kind of, I think it would be kind of a tough pill to swallow as far as the state of the, you know, younger fighters.
Well, since you uttered the phrase creating young stars, I wanted to throw out there before Mr. Erdman has to leave us, because he might soon, but Rod Salka, Lightning Rod Salka, speaking of young stars, he's getting the shot against Danny Garcia this coming weekend, so
I figured we'd get a little bit of that previewing in real quick before we left. Corey, what's your overall view of this fine matchup?
You know, it's I don't understand, I guess, why this card is happening, and I think that everyone basically has the same opinion about it, and we're kind of beating a dead horse by talking about how bad the card is. However, you know, I've been trying to rack my brain and think about cards that on the championship level, either on Showtime or on HBO, that were as bad as this, or at least on paper, have as little competition promised as this one does. And I really, like, you know, there's a short list. I mean, the one that sort of comes to mind is there was a 91 card on HBO with Terry Norris and Brett Lawley. And, you know, that was about as bad as I've seen on the championship level, again, on HBO or Showtime. This is about that bad. And it's interesting because I was talking to Gordon Hall, of course, the director of Showbox, at length last week. And he basically was telling me that he, at least on Showbox, sort of has the green light to go ahead and make fights with whatever promoter he wants, and he sort of has the green light to make the matchups the way that he wants. How is it that Showbox is basically the beacon and is the gold standard when it comes to matchmaking, competitive matchmaking, and on the very same network we can have cards like this, basically a week after, you know, one where things are very competitive? How is it that there is that kind of disconnect within the same company is totally beyond me.
Well, I think this shows you that, just real quick, that, like, Stephen Espinoza can't say no, you know, and Golden Boy's given him and in the Heyman era, they were giving him a pretty good product for a long time. Showtime, you know, closed the gap on HBO, even surpassed them, if, you know, depending on your point of view, and a card like this, you know, if were there no kind of, you know, strings between a promoter and fighters and a network executive, they would never approve something like this. But it's the relationship over there is obviously, you know, the kind of thing where they're greenlighting something, and it's just, it's, yeah, it's pretty insane. I mean, I'm just so used to it. It's not like, I mean, a matchup, at least, you know, Caporello had some credentials going into the Kovalev fight, I guess, but to say that he's like, oh, well, he was a top 20 light heavyweight, that was legit. No, I mean, that was a horrible mismatch, too, and Stalka probably will last longer than Caporello did. So at this point, it's like, to me, it doesn't even stand out as being that awful unless you kind of look at it from the perspective that, you know, hey, Danny's supposed to be the real fucking champion at 140. He's fighting a dude who's not even, like, top 25 at lightweight, the division beneath that, you know? In that sense, it's atrocious. But in the sense of a network, you know, airing this crap, I mean, kind of used to that stuff at this point. It's just been a really bad year in general.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, we could discuss this, and we could take this discussion everywhere, and we could talk about it from a macro level. But, I mean, boxing is sort of handcuffed by the fact that we only have a select few television dates. These types of fights, and Patrick, you can attest to this as a historian, these types of fights have always happened, and they have even happened on television all the time. It just used to be that we would see these, say, on a Wednesday night or, you know, a Saturday afternoon. They'd kind of be a toss-in on other cards. We would see these fights, but not on a premium cable. You know, this is supposed to be something I'm subscribing to,
yeah,
paying money to see effectively. But that's just the way the game goes right now.
Yeah, not as the attraction, exactly. Not as like, oh, we've had no boxing for a week and a half, so this is the attraction type of shit. No, totally. That's, you know, mismatches have happened forever. This is not anything new at all. And, you know, people, promoters, managers, whatever, these guys have been fleecing the public and, you know, kind of making money off of shitty matches for forever. But regardless, yeah, it has flipped a little bit in that these guys are getting paid a fairly, like, egregious, ludicrous amount to fight guys that, not everybody, not across the board, but at times to fight guys who just aren't deserving. And it's, like, the feature. So it's, yeah, that's not really acceptable.
No, and I think the most competitive fight on that card is going to be Danny Jacobs and Jared Fletcher. And even that, I mean, Fletcher might give him a little bit of difficulty for a little while, given that Jacobs, you know, even though he's obviously, he's come back for quite some time, it's still rusty in that he hasn't faced stern competition. But Fletcher, we saw hurt time and time again against Max Bursack, and Jacobs is a lot more powerful, a lot more accurate than he was, so even that's going to probably be a blowout as well. So we're going to have three blowouts in a row. The best you can hope for is that you can get your Saturday night started early if you're on the East Coast.
Well, yep. Or you just don't watch. I mean, it's not like you have an obligation to watch every
game. No, that too. Yeah.
And but I agree, you know, like with the network's exact, so they have to learn how to say no. You know, what is the alternative if they just said, no, we're not going to air that? Well, if Garcia wants to take that fight, like you said, they can shop it at any other network, you know, to see if anyone else wants to air it, or try to do an independent pay-per-view, which nobody would buy. I mean, or just fight off TV, you know, I mean, like, there's other options, but it's not, what does the network have to lose by just saying no? You know, it's just, HBO and Showtime are the customer. I mean, they should be, you know, when they're buying fights from fighters and doing this stuff, but it's like you said at the very beginning of the show, it all goes to this, like, incestuous relationship between everyone has a conflict of interest, and, you know, there's obviously between Showtime and that stable of fighters, there's some kind of, you know, agreement. I mean, it doesn't seem like, when is the last time you've heard Showtime wouldn't approve this opponent, you know? They don't do that. I mean, HBO, and sometimes wrongly, has refused opponents for fighters, you know? So, I mean, that's just how it is, I guess. It's like, you know, like everything else in boxing. Will it ever change? Probably not.
No, probably not. And I think the last time I was on this show, we had a lengthy discussion about this. And I always bring it back to this when people start going nuts about matchups or whatever. But, you know, this card and basically every other card is more or less going to do the same ratings as any other card. I mean, the same number of people are going to tune in week to week on Showtime, on HBO, and those numbers aren't going to move all that much. And so the networks don't have much reason to care. I mean, if there's no the numbers don't move that much, and when they do, you know, there's either a real good reason or no rhyme or reason whatsoever. I mean, Golovkin Deal was deemed, you know, a tank of a show, and even that did over a million viewers. So the matchups don't really make a difference. So the networks have no reason to care what they throw on there, because you're going to tune in anyway. The people, if you actually care and don't want to see this kind of stuff, the viewers have to walk away. They have to say, no, we're not going to watch this stuff, and make the networks care and see abysmal ratings, and then they might care. That's the only thing that television executives care about is ratings, because that's what makes them money. And if you continue watching, it just gets worse.
Well, it's like a total self-fulfilling prophecy, too, and it reminds me of a handful of years ago when ESPN2 was still, you know, like, figuring out ways to pump money into boxing, but then instead they were just kind of like, screw this, and started taking money out of the budget and then going, why are the ratings dipping, when they didn't have any money to pay for, you know, decent matchups. So it's just it's like the cyclical, like, sickness. It's ridiculous, you know, but I'm hoping that, I don't know, if nothing else, I'm just hoping that we kind of still get these, like, accidental good matchups that we've been getting, you know, ones that are mismatches going in, but then wind up kind of being good by mistake. If that's what we're going to get, I mean, it's better than nothing. It's better than shit. So. Yeah.
Corey.
Yes.
Hey, just give me a little bit of Golovkin love here. Like, tell me how he's going to become the next pound-for-pound great and a future Hall of Famer.
Okay. I mean, the standards are pretty low for the Hall of Fame anyway, so he probably will make it.
Well,
anyone who fights on HBO, he's going to make it into the Hall of Fame. Don't worry.
Yeah. But are you on the bandwagon here? I mean, are you thinking that he could be a true great, or do you think at some point he'll run into, you know, somebody and maybe get exposed for not having all the right tools?
Well, I mean, that might not be as big of an issue for him when it comes to all-time great status as a lack of competition right now for him at middleweight. Because, I mean, who do you want to see him against at middleweight, really? I mean, there's no one left. Even, you know, a fight against Cotto we kind of think is a foregone conclusion. So now we're talking about him moving up to super middleweight. If he were to clear out super middleweight, you know, if he moves up there and he beats Scotch Ward, you know, whoever else is in that division, then you could start talking about him, you know, in the all-time great category at 168, which has a pretty shallow kind of historical pool, but that's kind of a best-case scenario for him. I don't know how much further up he would move and still be that destructive force, but I think that's sort of the ceiling for him. Could he be an all-time great super middleweight by the end of his career? I mean, because there isn't too much to compare him against, but that really is what I see for Triple G by the end.
Well, if you have Kovalev and Adonis at light heavyweight, though, I mean, it's not a ridiculous possibility that he could someday even go as far up as there.
Sure.
And then I'm seeing, personally, I mean, I'm seeing Golovkin, Deontay Wilder in about 2019 for the heavyweight championship.
Well, he's got to get past Charlie Zelenoff then, man.
Yeah.
He's going to be serious contender by then. Guaranteed. Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, it's really, I agree with you with what you're saying about, at least at middleweight in particular, Corey, that there just really isn't the opposition there for him to be counted among any all-time greats in middleweight. That's a pretty thick division historically. So it's really tough for him to, even if he were to, like, mow through Suleiman, Sturm, and then, you know, crush whoever wins the Cotto, probably Canelo matchup, even if he rolled right through everybody there, that's not really, you know, that's not really all-time stuff, unfortunately. But I think that it's likely that we'll probably see him cruise forward.
Could you guys see a dude like Demetrius Andrade, like, becoming a factor at 154 or 160? I mean, are there other young fighters who maybe we just haven't considered that could have, you know, be competing on a really high level in the next couple of years?
Really, not that I've seen. I mean, I can't think of a guy at 154 that's coming out. I mean, Andrade is a nightmare-style matchup for a lot of guys, but we've seen him buzzed. We've seen him hurt. So there's always going to be that vulnerability there with him. You know, off the top of my head, I really can't think of guys at 54 that are going to become, you know, a major kind of wrecking ball like some of these guys, you know, like a Golovkin. I think there are certainly guys with the big two promoters at 54 that will be titleists and whatnot, but I don't think that anyone's going to stand out in this division for the next little while, at least not from what I've seen from the current prospect crop.
Charlo's, bro.
The Charlos are interesting because but I don't know that they're going to be a transcendent star necessarily because they don't fight that way. You know, they don't have that kind of gravitational pull towards them because they're just extremely competent boxers who don't make any mistakes in the ring. So I guess they could be equally as dominant, but I don't know that they become a star or have any sort of drawing power doing what they do.
They're basically the next KOSI and KOCORC Galaxy is what you're saying.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, the Galaxy was a great pressure fighter, but yeah.
Okay, all right. Just making sure, just clarifying. Totally going to be tweeting that in a minute. You know, and I think that I will real quick say that I think that there's probably a reason why they haven't pushed Demetrius Andrade very hard. And, I mean, I'm not hanging out in the gym with him or anything very often anyway. No, kidding. Not at all. But in any event, there's probably a reason why he has not been pushed very hard. And I'd have to say that we've seen him kind of buzzed before. We've seen him make mistakes. And I think that that's probably why. That they're probably not really wanting to take a gamble.
Spectacular. That's true. But, you know, he wasn't with one of the two big promoters. And, you know, he in comparison, I know he got dropped by Venus in the first round, but he, you know, in comparison to Lara against Freddie Hernandez and against Marta Rosian, I mean, you could argue that Andre was effective in both those fights. So, and he's been calling out Lara on Twitter, so I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably more political in the fact that now he's at HBO that he hasn't gotten in with any of the top guys. I mean, because I think it seems like he wants to.
I'd say give him his chance. You know, I'm definitely not against that, but I just, you know, I'm kind of skeptical is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. He got dropped by Venus.
Who is annoying. So, case closed.
Absolutely. Is his brother Gennady Martirosyan?
Yeah, Gennadyevich Martirosyan.
Is that Venus's bro?
Yeah, I think so. Right?
She'd be like, oh, your name's Gennady? That's awesome. What's your last name? Martirosyan. Oh.
Instant game killer, and totally instant game killer. Martirosyan last name. Well, Mr. Erdman, I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope to have you back at some point. But I will say, if you are not up on it, people, check out. Well, you're going to have to float out another link to your Sirius show. But first of all, but also contributor to Ring Magazine, RingTV.com, and also Fight Network analyst. So please do check him out there when you get a chance.
Thanks, guys. And yes, of course, you can have me back on here anytime. And I would have stayed longer, but I have to record my own show. So, you know, I like making rent occasionally when I can. So I'm gonna make sure that happens.
Well, make sure you let everyone know when this drops.
What was that?
Oh, I said make sure you let everyone know when your latest drops.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I'm on Twitter for. That and, I guess, nude photos of boxers.
Exactly.
All right, well, we'll see you next weekend. We'll go rock climbing next weekend.
Yay! All right, let's do it. Thanks a lot for having me, though, guys.
All right.
Thanks again, man.
Take care.
Oh, Corey Erdman. Always a hoot. He's a good dude.
Future legend,
for sure. Now, that guy is the real Twitter king, I'll tell you that much.
Well, I want him to grow out like a sick, like maybe 2-day beard, like a 5 o'clock shadowish thing, kind of, and then I'm definitely campaigning for him to replace Kellerman on HBO.
Yeah, but does he have to like contract the herpes too?
The herpes scar, but it is a herpes scar. It's a scar, but it is from taking a herpes.
It's from getting herpes treatment. Okay. Well, you know, as long as he doesn't have to do that, he's, you know, Corey Erdman, I like him. I don't want him, you know, endangering his health. But, yeah, I'd be for him replacing that guy.
Well, with his knowledge of boxing history, he could definitely find somebody even better than Joe Louis to compare Golovkin to. You know, I mean, you might as well just go Sugar Ray Robinson or something, or maybe Henry Armstrong.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I thought Joe Louis was setting the bar a little bit low.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I mean, really, come on.
You probably have
only
to look
Joe
beyond
Louis?
Boxing, you know, religious icons and freedom fighters and so forth.
Well, when I heard the name Joe Louis, I was like, only Joe Louis? That's it?
That was most people's reaction, I think.
Yeah.
A rare moment of understatement from Kells.
Ridiculous. I mean, he called him, he was like, oh, he's like Joe Louis with power.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I figured I'd rewind the discussion a little bit because I was just trying to. I knew that Mr. Erdman wasn't going to be able to stay forever, so I wanted to kind of touch on a few things. Pause before he left. But
yeah.
Anyway, going back to man, childish as fuck. Going back to Brandon Rios versus Diego Chavez. I mean, we don't have to revisit it forever because I think we pretty much get the gist of how we all feel about it. But. I do want to say that, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I am seeing, maybe, like, I just have kind of, like, a select Twitter feed or some shit, I don't know, but I'm not really seeing a whole lot of anger or criticism being leveled towards Brandon Rios. And, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not saying that the way the fight unfolded was his fault, per se, definitely not, but he contributed. I mean, he was definitely in there being rough, fighting the way that he does. But I'd also brought it up last week that, you know, it's been a really long time since about 2010 that we've seen a Brandon Rios fight that didn't involve some type of like drama, whether it was pre-fight, in the middle of the fight. I mean, even the, Anthony Peterson fight, you know, like,
yeah.
That wasn't Rios's, you know, fault either, but I'm just saying that it seems almost like likely at this point that some fucking bullshit is about to unfold in any Brandon Rios fight. So in any event, I just thought that it was a little bit unfair. What's that? Sorry.
Well, bullshit or awesomeness, you know, because he's also been in a lot of great
exactly.
fights. Over
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, there's always
been
something. And, again, even, like, a real fight was, like, you know, the scorecard. A lot of people didn't like the scorecards. I don't know. I mean, I think about it. My take on it is, like, I thought Rios, I think overall Rios really didn't look any worse for the wear to me than he did in the Pacquiao fight or than he did in the second Alvarado fight. You know, I think that a lot of the questions going in was, you know, is Rios shot? I think the answer to that is no. I thought he was, you know, had a lot of moments where he was effective. I thought Chavez boxed really well, but they basically, in my mind, fought on even terms. You know, Rios obviously was beneficiary of a couple bad referee decisions, but I thought it was a pretty close fight, and I think, you know, Chavez showed that he's good on the level, and, you know, I'd see both guys again. I thought that had there been a better referee, that fight could have gotten really good, and we'd see, you know, how we could make a more informed opinion about it, because it was marred by a lot of bullshit. But as far as, like, directing any, you know, Rios has always been, in the ring, a pretty solid professional. I mean, I don't remember him really complaining much in previous fights. He's been in a lot of rough fights, even during the Abreu fight where he's being held all night. I don't know. Maybe he did complain a lot, but I don't specifically remember that, you know. So I was surprised that he was, like, you know, being so vocal about all of Chavez's infractions. And who knows? Maybe he just was having, you know, you don't know what's going through his mind or anything like that. I thought he fought generally well, and I think he deserves some benefit of the doubt for a lot of his antics because it hasn't been a pattern in his fights before. But you're right, a lot of his fights do have some kind of weird element to them. But I think some of that is just because he's such a rough inside fighter and that's where stuff happens, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, there wasn't complaining on this level in the Abreu fight, but he did complain.
I know he complained a lot afterward. I don't remember him complaining during the fight, like to the asking the referee to help him or anything.
Not like that. No. Not like that. Like not on this level where he was like, you know, being fairly specific. But he was complaining, and it wasn't so much a complaining to the ref thing. It was like him jawing that Abreu wasn't fighting with him type of thing. You know, I mean, it wasn't the same type of thing, but he was complaining regardless. That's even like, you know, beside the point, but I do think that you brought up a really good point though, which is that the expectation, or at least a lot of the expectation, was that Brandon Rios might look, deteriorated or slower or whatever you want to call it when the action finally hit against Chavez. And that, like, wasn't really the case. I mean, there were instances in there, and a lot of people did have Chavez ahead at the time of the stoppage, which I didn't think was out of the question. It was close. You know, the action was kind of tough to score. But regardless, you know, even so, even if you had him ahead, it wasn't because Rios looked shot. It wasn't because he looked horrible. I mean, he's always had kind of a difficult time, like, adjusting to certain styles and things, but as far as when the action hit and, you know, when stuff was getting rough, he looked fine. He was throwing good punches on the inside, threw a lot of really good body shots in the middle rounds that I thought he was kind of catching up with. And also I thought might have been part of the, you know, the impetus for Chavez to start, you know, really looking for ways out, as it were, because I don't know, would you agree that Chavez seemed to kind of be looking for a DQ in the last couple rounds? Because I kind of really felt that that's what he was doing.
I disagree with that. I didn't think so at all. I mean, I thought that I think that he
was... I mean, not because he was a bad guy, but I think that I literally... Sorry to interrupt you, but I like to kind of like expand on it. I just felt like it almost seemed to me as if he was getting frustrated by the officiating, and he was kind of just like, fuck this. Like, I can't do anything.
I think that Chavez is not entirely blameless in the situation. I mean, he did do some unsavory shit that probably may have warranted a point deduction, you know, some stern warnings. But I just think a better referee would have gotten control of it. And, you know, the infractions that did happen, I just don't think rose to the level of a disqualification, you know. But when I was, like, I didn't see that from Chavez. I mean, I thought he boxed well in the last couple rounds. I thought he was still right there in the fight. And, you know, yeah, the way he took the disqualification, he wasn't, you know, as angry as he may have been, but he definitely looked completely confused and bewildered by it. So I don't think so, man. I mean, the guy didn't fly here, you know, 2 days before the fight on a 14-hour flight. He didn't come here to, you know, I think look to get disqualified. But I do agree with you that He was obviously getting more and more frustrated with the referee, and I just think that, you know, you see things, the point deductions and then ultimately, like, disqualification, I mean, it really should be a last resort for a referee, and not something that they're kind of seem eager to do. And I just thought there was a few times when, I mean, the second point when Chavez kind of used his forearm, you know, you see stuff like that happen in fights, and it's not always an automatic point deduction, you know? And I think that a big part of his problem was, like, he couldn't communicate with Chavez. He was only speaking in English, and Chavez looked like he had no idea why he was being penalized, you know?
I brought that up after the fight, and it got brushed aside pretty quick, but I was like, hey, you know, he was, what's his name, Dracula just kept pulling Chavez aside. And it was like he was very concisely speaking to him in English. But I'm like, dude, he fucking doesn't speak English. Like, how is that helping?
Yeah.
You know? That was a big part of the problem. You know, or at least I felt it was a big part of the problem, that he was trying to explain to him what to do and stuff. And it wasn't like he was using that kind of, like, referee sign language where, you know, he, like, points to his elbow or something, you know? Like, he was just, like, waggling his finger in his face, doing the fucking Jane 80. And I'm like, man, come on. Anyway,
I think a guy like Tony Weeks would be, like, the perfect referee to have ref that fight, you know, whereas a lot of people were like, well, Smoger had refed it. Yeah, but it also could have been really ugly under Smoger. And the problem with Smoger, he's not, at times, the most emphatic, forceful ref, you know. That's what it really needed, somebody who could just kind of stop the nonsense early, get them fighting, who wasn't going to overreact to every single, you know, rough thing that happened in the ring. And, you know, maybe there would have been point deductions, even from a guy like Tony Weeks, but I think somebody like him had, you know, the tone you set early gives you that authority to make those kind of decisions. And when Draculus was just throwing, you know, the first point deduction was ridiculous, then the one on Rios was, you know, was just an obvious makeup call, and the whole time he just had no, they didn't respect him in that ring. And when the fighter has respect for the referee, it's like anything can happen, so... If you look at it from Dracula's point of view and his mindset in that last round, I mean, it's not crazy to imagine how he ended up just disqualifying him for it. If the problem is, like, what got him to that point.
Well, I do have to say I have a lot of love for Tony Weeks and his, you know, escúchame, cuídate, protégense. I like it. I like it. So at least he gives it a shot, though, you know. But, yeah, I do have to wonder, though, and I got to ask you, what do you think would have happened if the fight would have continued? Like, you know, assuming they could have, like, switched referees mid-fight or some shit at that point, and the fight would have continued, what do you think would have happened?
I mean, I think it would have been just similar. I think it probably would have been a similar fight that it was in the moments when there was a little bit more action, and I think it probably would have gone to the cards and ended up being one of those deals where you could have scored it either way, you know, and the official judges had Chavez up around, so it seemed like he was going to get a fair shake, but I think that's kind of where it was headed. You know, obviously the guy that I was looking to, if either of them was going to get hurt, I thought it would have been Chavez, because, you know, Rios took a lot of his best shots and basically walked right through him. He's just got an incredible chin and ability to absorb punishment. Chavez did get buzzed in one of those rounds a little bit. Obviously, we saw him get knocked around the ring by Keith Thurman and eventually stopped. So I felt like it was going to either kind of continue on the path it was going, and it would have been one of those fights where people had scorecards anywhere from 6-4 for either guy, or, you know, maybe Rios would have been able to catch him and actually hurt him badly enough to put him away. But, you know, that was my prediction going in. I picked Rios. So, I mean, I think, obviously, that it's colored by that I thought Rios was capable of stopping him. But, you know, Chavez, he's obviously a good boxer. And you can't disregard the fact that his whole schedule got thrown off and he wasn't sure if he was going to even get the fight, you know. And that may have affected his legs. It may have made him have to stand in place and trade more, which benefited Rios. And that's what they said during the broadcast. It may have led to him, you know, a lot of the excessive clinching that he was doing early in the fight. So the whole thing, it's a tough, because of the refereeing, because we're not sure, you know, was Chavez at 100%, you know, it's like, the whole thing is kind of, I thought it was a good fight, I thought it was worthwhile, but as far as, like, taking, you know, gleaning any great pieces of information from it, I think that's where we're a little bit limited. But I think the one thing we can say is that, you know, for Rios' part, He does look like a guy who's still going to be able to compete, you know, against guys in that division. He's not going to beat the best fighters. He's not going to beat great boxers. But he's a tough guy, and he's going to be a handful for anybody. And, you know, I'd welcome Chavez back on the airwaves, too. We've seen him in two fights against, you know, good American fighters, and both times they were good fights, and he put up, you know, valiant efforts.
And, yeah, and hey, you know, our dude, TKO underscore radio, brought up the idea of, well, he wasn't
like the first one to think about it, but right now he reminded me of the idea of a third Rios Alvarado fight. That shit would be perfect.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I've always thought that was going to happen at some point. I'm not sure what the plan is. If Alvarado's going to try to stick down at 140, or, you know, he's a big guy too. I mean, it makes sense that they could do that. It does kind of feel like, I mean, I'm in the minority here. I wouldn't even mind a Rios Chavez rematch, you know, just on more even terms with a better referee. And you know, I also think Top Rank's probably going to look at Rios as somebody to maybe fight like Tim Bradley. So there's options, but yeah, I mean, the Rios Alvarado fight, the first two were awesome. So I think it's going to happen at some point. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I mean, it just has, you know, it's one of those things, kind of like how I talked about with the second Floyd Maidana fight, where it just kind of has the built-in storyline. It doesn't really need any upselling. It pretty much sells itself, and it would be easy to put together, I think, especially at this point, you know, where there's not much as far as, like, celebrity or status separating the two, you know what I mean? And that could change relatively quickly with one guy losing by knockout somewhere or something, you know what I mean? So in any event, I think that's pretty – right now, as far as both of their, like, career trajectories, they could meet up again and it would still be good and still make sense. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I don't know why the hell I would ever suggest a Chavez rematch in front of that. I mean, that it does make a lot of sense. And, you know, Alvarado has – well, I mean, he's in need
What's
of a win
right
you, now.
What's wrong
with you, bro? Probably, you know, so.
Fuck is wrong
I have
with you.
No idea. It just, you know, it left kind of a bitter taste because it was just so – unsatisfying.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just say that like it had gone another two rounds and kept that pace, and Chavez wins like a split decision. I'd be all about the Alvarado rematch, but I don't know. It's just that fight left.
No,
I just kind of want, you know.
I don't disagree with you, but I mean, like, you know, if you're looking at it just kind of like, you know, what fight would you want, or are you cool with this fight, or whatever? I'm totally down for a Chavez rematch, but it's just when you add in the outside factors of, like, you know, a kind of a limited time span in Brandon Rios' career and the kind of, there's other options that I think probably make sense more. Although, you know, dude, I'm not opposed to, as you said earlier, seeing Chavez on TV again. I know a lot of people are, like, pretty, you know, still, like, upset about it, and some people are, you know, bigger fans of Rios than Chavez, so they're just mad at Chavez, which, again, I kind of get. But at the same time, I don't think that he totally, like, fucked himself with this performance, per se. I think that I'd like to see him kind of get another chance, or like to see him on TV again and kind of see where he goes. And if he's able to string another, you know, win or two together, fuck it, why not, dude? There's definitely unfinished business. That's another, you know, prepackaged promotion that they can do. But in the meantime,
I'd rather see Top Rank go that route with, like, Rios and Alvarado or Chavez and that, you know, in there somewhere, than Bradley get mixed up with those guys right now, just because, you know, Bradley's already, I think the Bradley-Provodnikov rematch is a huge fight, you know. It's just, I think a lot of people would look forward to that. The first one was awesome fight of the year, you know, and those guys seem to be on a more similar level. I mean, I know Provodnikov lost to Algeria or whatever, but you know what I mean? Whereas, like, I don't know, Brad, I mean, I think Provodnikov is just we'll see. But, like, you know, the winner of a Rios-Alvarado rematch then does get into the mix for something like that. Especially, like, let's say Bradley outboxes him, wins on points, Rios beats Alvarado, then Rios-Provodnikov is way bigger than it would be now. I mean, I think if that happened now, a lot of people would be like, fuck, Rios is going to just take a ridiculous amount. I mean, it'd be an awesome fight, but, like, you know, if you're worried about Rios' health, that's not a great fight.
I think, well, yeah, that's true, but I also think that that's the type of fight that's probably just going to be really good no matter when you make it, you know? Like,
yeah, it'll be good,
just,
but it's better with, like, Rios coming off a win, you know? It's better with Rios than beating Alvarado, because
for sure. No,
but
for
Bradley's
sure.
An
I mean,
like, I don't think there's anywhere really for Bradley to go besides Provodnikov, unless like Marquez is really intent on a rematch. But I don't think that sells well. And you know, Bradley's kind of near the top of the division. I mean, only losses to Pacquiao, so he's an interesting K. It'd be great to see Bradley get in there with like Keith Thurman or Sean Porter or one of those guys.
He's
you know,
a bit of a wild card in there right now.
Yeah,
Bradley's a bit of a wild card there right now.
Yeah. And he's we've seen him in a really second fight. And even against the second fight against Pacquiao, I mean, he went out there trying to brawl. So he's endeared himself a lot to fans since, you know, he got the good win to validate himself as a great boxer, and he's also been in some great fights, so.
Yeah, but James, against who? Against who? Against who?
That was awesome. I know what you're talking about. I saw Friday Night Fights.
Dude, oh my God. That was, holy shit. That was crazy. Well, fuck, dude, speaking of lunatics, I wanted to touch on this Kovalev situation again real quick before we moved on to, you know, talking shit on next week. But, dude, oh man, Kovalev, I just want to love him. I just want to love him. That's really all I want to do, right?
Well, how can you
Isn't
not?
That all anybody
he's
wants
a,
to do?
He's a he's a great man. I mean, there's no question. He's up there as far as you know likability. I mean, all those Russian guys just are compelling figures, or former Soviets, I should say. And they, you know, this fight was kind of a waste of time, but whatever. You know, he got a big win, or you know, he got a big fight coming up with Hopkins, so that was really the bigger story. You know, the Caparello wasn't a surprise. I mean, even the first round knockdown was kind of lame, so.
Well, I mean, you know, oh, man, Sergey Kovalev. I don't really know what to expect entirely from the Hopkins fight, as I said earlier. I think that there's a lot of different, you know, there's just a lot of things that could happen in the fight that kind of make me wonder. And I mean, you know, I wouldn't even really be that surprised by almost any outcome at all. Literally, like any DQ, no contest,
out,
whatever, anything.
You would be surprised if Hopkins knocked him out?
That would probably be like the most surprising outcome. But right before that would be Hopkins getting knocked out actually. And what I mean by that is like Hopkins getting knocked out like clean. I talked about it last night, but I think
clean
that Hopkins
would be weird. Yeah,
the type of dude that guy would like bite Kovalev's leg or something like that, if it came down to it, like to avoid getting knocked out. I just don't think that he would be like that dude would like try to throw Kovalev through the ropes or some shit. I don't know. I just feel like Hopkins is the type of dude that's like, I'm not getting knocked out. I don't care what you do.
Yeah, I can see him like flying out of the ring like a Cintron and then just being carted off with like a neck brace, and then 2 days later he's totally fine.
And then totally punching the ambulance. Yeah, I could totally see him doing that.
Part of the wizardry of Hopkins. You know, I don't know, man. To be honest, like, yeah, him getting knocked out clean, that's the downside of, like, what happens if, like, Kovalev just knocks him out and, like, Pacquiao got knocked out and then Hopkins is just unconscious? I mean, then it's just like, what the fuck? That guy's, like, 50. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, well,
you know,
if you were to put that,
the story's not
going to
end well. It never does anybody. So I hope he does. I hope he does get beat up for a couple rounds and then just like fake an injury or something and gets TKO'd and then cry foul, and that's how he can go out. You know, but it doesn't. I mean, seeing Kovalev, if Kovalev does like really beat him up, I mean, it's not going to be fun for anybody to watch.
If you were to put that scenario on like a World Star video, like 30-year-old. Fights 50-year-old, you would have people calling for Kovalev's head. You know, you'd be like, what the fuck? You know, that guy's an old man. He totally just picked on a dude. You know, this is obviously not that situation, but yeah, dude, this is weird. I don't know. And I do think that there is it does say something about this era's, you know, competition and whatnot, you know, especially if Hopkins wins. But, man, I'm hoping. I've gotten so sick of watching Hopkins and seeing, you know, the way, like, just the kind of level that he drags fights down to that I'm really am hoping that Kovalev just straight up knocks him out.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm now like wondering, like, is that even like better for Kovalev? You know, like, it's just
I don't know.
I'm hoping for more like a couple knockdowns and then a TKO, and he just blows him out after like two or three rounds. I think that's better for Kovalev. Whereas, like, if he knocks him out and sends him to the hospital, people are going to be sad about that. Not the haters. I mean, obviously some people will love it, but I don't know.
Well,
I'm not going to be thrilled if Hopkins get like seriously hurt.
I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. It's not that I want to see I don't. I don't want to see Bernard Hopkins seriously injured or something like that. But, you know, assuming, like, for example, Kovalev did totally clean, knock him out or something like that, or straight up send him to the hospital, whatever, yeah, that would kind of be a almost like a, what do you call it, Max Baer, you know, type of situation where, like, from then on, it's like, he's already killed a guy in the ring, more or less. So, he's basically in there fucking maiming people. Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm literally looking forward to the fight. I want to see what happens, but I do think there's a distinct possibility that eventually Hopkins' age is going to catch up to him, and we will see him get either knocked out or, you know, pretty badly hurt. But it may work in his favor, too, because I do think referees are going to be more. I mean, the guy's a genuine legend, you know, and one of the best fighters of the last 20 years, easily. So it's...
Oh yeah,
yeah,
no question. He's probably one of the best, like, two or three.
I think he does get hurt. I don't think the referee is going to be letting him take a whole lot of punishment. And he really has nothing to lose here. You know, I mean, he really doesn't. So I mean, if he beats Kovalev, it's a huge win. We can't go back and then say, oh, well, Kovalev wasn't that good and he never went the distance. You know, Kovalev is really, really highly regarded. I mean, the whole outrage over Stevenson and Kovalev not fighting, you know, that shows that more people consider Kovalev to be the next best contender for Stevenson than considered Hopkins. So. You know, we have to give Hopkins, I mean, if he can somehow pull this off, it's crazy. But, again, it's just, you know, Kovalev is much more terrifying than a guy like John Pascal. I mean, you can go back and say, like, oh, well, we said that about Pascal. Well, no, we didn't really say that about Pascal. I mean, Kelly Pavlik, maybe, but that fight, too, I mean, Hopkins was closer to his prime. You can argue Pavlik's more limited. I don't think he really has the power of Kovalev, even close to it. And, you know, Pavlik was jumping up 10 pounds. I don't know. I mean, there's different, you know, that was a great win. I think if he beats Kovalev, it is the best win he's had.
Yeah.
Well, maybe going
no
back
question.
To Trinidad, you know.
There's no question that it's a big, you know, this is a serious mountain for Hopkins to climb. And in that sense, you know, I've talked a lot of shit about the guy in the last few years. And it has nothing to do with, like, hating him as a person or anything like that. It literally has everything to do with simply not finding his style pleasing to my eyes. But regardless, this is a serious, you know, this is a serious challenge for Bernard Hopkins. And in that sense, I have to, you know, really give the guy credit. I didn't think he was going to do it. I thought that he was more likely to wait around for Adonis Stevenson, like you said earlier in the broadcast, that Adonis Stevenson's style probably lends itself to, you know, trying to box with Hopkins a little bit more, which is like the exact fucking total opposite thing of what you should be doing against Bernard Hopkins and will, you know, basically make you lose every single time. But, you know, that said, it seemed like Bernard Hopkins probably would see that and go after that fight because at the time seemed easier to make. And now he's kind of just said, fuck it. And he's going against the dude that seemingly punches harder, is coming in there to destroy, is coming off of, you know, a bunch of stoppage wins where he's pretty much just totally obliterated guys. That's, you know,
yeah.
I'm not
going to
say
that's
all-time stuff, but it's a serious challenge. It is.
You know, there's a counterpoint that has said that, like, no, actually, Kovalev is more fit for Hopkins because he's a puncher and he walks forward and he's more plodding, and Stevenson is a better boxer and has better footwork and so forth. And you look at who's beaten Hopkins, you know, it was boxers, basically. And he always did really well against guys who were known as punchers. But, you know, I just think Kovalev, I don't know. I mean, I think this specific style, I do think that, you know, the boxers who Eaton Hopkins also had a lot higher activity rate, and a guy like Stevenson can at times become more of a counterpuncher, you know. But the whole my whole thing, I just think an offensive force like Kovalev is going to pressure Hopkins a lot more than what Stevenson would. And, you know, maybe that does play right into Hopkins' hands, but a lot of this is founded on the fact that he's 49 years old, and I don't think he's going to be able to defend everything that comes at him.
Yeah.
You know, if he's in his prime, I'll grant you, it's probably a better style for him to look good against, especially to get off his own types of punches, than somebody like Stevenson. I mean, against Chad Dawson, that's the problem. Dawson's nowhere near the offensive fighter of Kovalev, but he's, you know, his boxing, his hand speed, and keeping him at a distance, it basically Hopkins wouldn't throw any punches throughout that fight, you know. So against guys like Stevenson, he can, I mean, against guys like Kovalev who come at him, he can open up more. But, I mean, this is, the guy's 50 years old, and he just hasn't, to me, hasn't faced a fighter who's as good as Kovalev, regardless of styles. And when you throw in the fact that he's going to be pressured all night and dealing with a lot of activity, it just, I think it's, you know, I respect the hell out of him for taking the fight, but I do think it's going to be a rough one.
I think that if you put the Bernard Hopkins that beat, like, for instance, Antonio Tarver in there, I think that then I'd probably be looking at the matchup going, fuck, I don't know if Kovalev is, you know, I think Kovalev might have some issues here. But just seeing how Bernard Hopkins' style has deteriorated and how his output is just kind of like, he's just like this, like, opportunistic predator now, you know, like almost like a scavenger. He just fucking takes whatever leftovers there are laying out there, and he makes it work. And, you know, it's commendable because, you know, he does a lot with a little. But I agree with you. I think that if somebody can press, can throw a lot of punches, he's going to be in trouble. And I hope that's what happens because I'm sick of seeing it. We didn't really get into the Vargas-Novikov fight very much with Corey Erdman. But I figured we would now, if that's cool with you.
Oh, yeah.
Sir, it was a good fight, man. I thought it was a pretty entertaining fight. I thought that it was fairly close. You know, there was a lot of pretty solid inside action when there was inside action. Both of them were, you know, it was kind of a battle of jabs from the outside at times. It was a solid fight. You know, it was a totally solid opener that was basically more or less ruined by a couple scorecards that were like, the fuck? Who the fuck had it 10-2?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, really?
I mean, it was nuts. I mean, it was the scorecard. It was some of the worst scoring I've seen. I think. I mean, I thought Novikov was right in the fight, or, you know, slightly ahead. And, you know, how can you explain that? I mean, how can it be anything but corruption? You know, I mean, if that's just incompetence, then. But it's just like three different judges ringside all saw it that way. And it's not like we were just seeing on TV. The crew that was at ringside, they're right there. They all had it. Even, you know, Letterman had Novikov ahead a little bit, or maybe he had Vargas winning 7-5. But, yeah, it does suck, you know. And that's the thing about Vargas, he's been in some good fights. He's been in some close fights, and yet he's won widely in a lot of the fights that are close. So it's kind of getting the, you know, he's starting to get some resentment for it. But as far as the actual fights themselves, I mean, most of the time they're pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think that he probably gets a little bit of a bad rap in that regard. You know, I mean, what was it? The Josecito Lopez fight, which I actually thought, you know, I thought that Lopez kind of opened the door to losing myself. You know, and I like Josecito, but, you know, in that fight I thought that he kind of like laid up a little bit in the later rounds, and I was like, well, I mean, you need to get busy. And I remember watching it at a friend's house and sitting there going, he needs to get busier, he needs to get busier. And of course everybody in the room was rooting for him, so they're like, no, he's doing fine. I'm like, he needs to throw, and he wasn't throwing, and Jesse Vargas was jabbing, and I was like, watch, that's going to win the rounds. And so of course the decision went to Vargas, and that's just kind of how it's been in his last handful of, like, close fights, where it's been like, you know, it could kind of go either way, but he gets the benefit of the doubt, and it's like, well, fuck, man. It gets to be one of those, like, kind of like Birdo situations where it's almost like a backlash for doing, like, impossibly well. You know what I mean? Like, improbably well or something, you know? So, yeah. It's a bummer because the fight itself was solid. It was enjoyable.
Well, that's the thing about Vargas is, like, he's not, you know, he hasn't looked great in you know, his fights, but he keeps his activity level up, you know, and he does give himself a chance to win some cards. The problem is, like, it's kind of like the Devin Alexander, although much more watchable fights, but, you know, it's like if you have a high activity level but you're not landing really clean punches and your opponent is, you know, it's tough for a lot of people to score you those rounds. But I agree. I mean, I have no issue with him as a fighter. I mean, I think he's, you know, exciting enough and been in good fights, and he does, you know, he makes an effort. He's not trying to stink it out. He's, you know, he makes efforts to win fights and often gets into a lot of exciting exchanges. You know, and it's not like he didn't, I mean, he did plenty against Novikov. It's just the only downside to was the scorecards. If it had come out like 7-5, 7-5 Vargas and one card for Novikov and it was a split for Vargas, most people would be fine with it. It's just the fact that the guy never had an honest chance to win that fight.
And by extension, you know, or, well, not by extension, but I guess similarly kind of, was the main event of that card in Rios Chavez. That's kind of what made that card in general just kind of like, ugh, was that that's almost how it felt at times with Chavez, too, that it was almost like a couple of guys came there just with no chance to win at all, and it's like, oh, fuck, why are we even watching this? Not to get super negative and be all, you know, people questioning my fucking fandom and shit, but, you know, it's frustrating to watch a card like that where it seems as though, you know, despite doing well or these guys could do well, not do well, it doesn't matter because they have no chance to win. The fuck?
Well, I feel worse for Novikov because he obviously had nothing to do with the scorecards, you know, no responsibility.
Certainly.
I mean, Chavez had some responsibility for the way that fight played out. I mean, I don't think he got an entirely fair shake, but,
yeah,
you know, nobody forced him to, you know, I mean, the thumb under the eye did seem obvious on tape, and Rios, you know, I don't imagine that he just made that up, you know, so... You know, Chavez has some culpability in his fate. And interestingly enough, he was getting the benefit of the doubt on those scorecards because two of them were close for Chavez and the other one was right there for Rios, you know, close for Rios. So he wasn't, you know. But Novikov had just seemingly had no chance to win. I mean, what could he possibly do?
Yeah. Okay.
So only got two points on the card. I mean, that was just...
You know, I mean, what the really shitty thing is, like, at least going forward, in my opinion, is that Novikov is probably unlikely to get a whole lot of opportunities. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't really brought in to win in the first place. And so now that he, you know, by script has not won, and on the scorecards, you know, at least on paper, it looks like it was not a close win at all, then he's probably not likely to get a whole shitload of opportunities going forward, and Jesse Vargas will. So... Where does he go? What's going to happen?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. You know, Top Rank likes to use the familiar guys that have been on American TV at least once. And like you said, it was a good fight, and the guy's still going to be, you know, one loss on his record. So I'm sure he'll keep a high ranking in, you know, whatever sanctioning organization. So he'll be back. He'll get another chance.
Well, there's no question that... you know, Jesse Vargas will be in some type of showcase, or, well, I don't mean like showcase as far as a bad matchup, but, you know, showcased on, you know, HBO, most likely HBO.
Yeah, I wonder if you won't end up fighting somebody like Rios or Alvarado.
What's what? I'm sorry?
I was saying, I wonder if Vargas doesn't end up fighting Rios or Alvarado.
Yeah, I don't really know what the end game is
with him. That was kind of like what I was just about to ask was, it's not totally clear to me exactly what they want to do with him. Obviously they would hope that he would become an undefeated great champion or some shit like that, moneymaker. But now that doesn't really seem as though it's in the cards, or at least not right now, I don't really know who they're kind of lining him up for then, because that's pretty much the name of the game. If you're not trying to be pushed towards being a superstar, then you're basically being pushed towards being, you know, fodder for someone else. So, I don't know. I'm not really sure. Miss Cleo, what do you think?
You know, a lot of those guys have unfinished business, Alvarado and Rios, Provodnikov and Bradley. I mean, there's going to be a time when somebody will come out there and, you know, maybe, I don't know, what the hell's going on with Mikey Garcia? Is he going to ever fight again? But if he fights for Top Rank and he moves up and gets to 140, Vargas will be there because he's got a belt. He's got, you know, somewhat of a name or whatever, and he'll get a fight with somebody on a higher level at some point.
I don't know what Mikey Garcia is doing, but he doesn't really come off as, you know, super excited about boxing in general. So I don't know what he's doing. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is not that much more.
Yeah, that sucks.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really understand the reasoning why he seems to be wanting to leave Top Rank, because there's not really a whole lot of options for him.
Terrence Crawford is another future opponent for Top Rank. They want to get Terrence Crawford a belt at 140. You know, if he wants to go to 140, Vargas is the guy that they have that has that belt. So,
well, that actually,
I can see Crawford fighting Vargas at some point.
Speaking of which, actually, I had written some notes down about that because I read that the other day that Terrence Crawford versus Ray Beltran was more or less finalized.
Yeah.
So, fucking A. What do you think about that fight?
I think Crawford wins. You know, Beltran's a good, tough fighter, and I think you can give him a good fight. But I do think that it's a style that's going to be more favorable to Crawford relative to what Gamboa brought. Beltran's a little bit slower. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't hate the fight. I mean, as far as a lightweight, you know, a guy contender in the division, I think it's a good fight. But I don't think it's going to be that competitive. And you know, I think Top Rank recognizes Crawford probably has more upside potential. I mean, you look at the crowd he drew in Omaha, and that Gamboa fight was so good and electrifying, you know, that I do think they're going to push Crawford a little bit harder, and that's where a guy like Vargas fits in. I mean, his career hasn't really blown up because he hasn't won in a really impressive way, you know, and a couple of his fights have been really close and controversial, and it's almost like they scaled him back a little bit after the Josecito fight, you know. But Crawford, I mean, he just seems like he's got a lot going for him, and yeah, I mean, I like Beltran as an opponent. I think he'll be active and throw a lot of punches and things, but I just think Crawford's a different level. And the lightweight division being the way that it is, I mean, there's not really anybody who's, I think, would, you know, give Crawford that good of a fight. I mean, the guys who would be the stinkers like Miguel Vasquez, and maybe he deserves a shot at that, but, it's not a fight I'd really be clamoring for.
Oh, well, Miguel Vasquez is going to have his little grubby paws full with Mickey Bay. So, yeah, so that's not going to happen. But,
wait,
what, you know,
has Bay done
say,
ever since got knocked out by John Molina?
I don't even know. He was on a card. He was on a card like a month or two ago that was money team card. I don't even remember. I think it might have been on, like, Fox Sports or some shit, but it was on that card that it was, like, there was, like, five fights on it, and all of them were money team fighters. I'm pretty sure he was on that card. But regardless,
yeah, I think it's
anyway.
That
I mean, what the fuck? I mean, you know, anyway, whatever. So that's where Vasquez is tied up. But one of the things that I think is kind of good and interesting about Crawford versus Beltran is that they're taking it back to Omaha. So everybody's going to turn up in Omaha.
Well, Beltran is an exciting fighter. I mean, it's a great style, I think, for another potentially really good fight. I'm just questioning how effective Beltran can be. But, you know, it is a good style. I mean, it's a perfect style. A guy like Vasquez might be more of a challenge for Crawford as far as winning or looking good. But it certainly wouldn't be a very palatable fight to watch.
I think that there's not really a whole lot for Terrence Crawford past a few guys at that weight division. But, I mean, Beltran's one of them. He's a guy that's kind of like, you know, been working hard. A lot of people, myself included, thought he beat Ricky Burns before Terrence Crawford did. But then, you know, kind
of
got screwed on the cards. But.
He did. He deserves the fight. I mean,
he deserves the fight. But, no, I do agree with
you, though. As a top lightweight contender, for sure. It's just the division is not great, and Crawford does look like he's separated himself a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, look at Crawford's resume. It's not that deep. You know, I mean, it's really Ricky Burns was the guy at lightweight. And then I think Gamboa, it's hard to rank him. He's really talented, but he's obviously was a little older and very small. You know, it's Crawford's a guy, too. Maybe we're getting carried away from him. I mean, it's like guys like him and Keith Thurman and, you know, you really parse the resume. Even a guy like Kovalev, I mean, none of them really have a signature win against a, you know, a really, you know, elite top divisional fighter. I mean, because like you said, when Crawford beat Burns, he'd already been basically, he'd had a tough fight with that other guy before that, and then Beltran, I think, too, had a, should have won that fight.
Well, I mean,
beyond that,
I think that
it's really just Gamboa, and he beat Freitas Prescott at 140, but.
But I think that especially after the Gamboa fight, not so much going in, but, you know, we looked forward to that fight and all, but
after the fight. Really good win for him.
Well, but I mean, after the fight, I think that a lot of it was about how he fought, because a lot of people, you know, us included, were like, oh, he's probably going to keep his distance. He's probably going to try to, move his feet a lot, you know, jab, et cetera. He's probably not going to engage a whole lot. And then in reality, he actually wound up engaging a lot more than we thought he would. And a couple of exchanges, a couple rounds were really solid, fun stuff, blah, blah, blah. And so I think that that's a lot of the, excitement or whatever about Terrence Crawford. You know, now I think that what we're probably getting ahead of ourselves with is the whole star thing with Terrence Crawford. I think that the wins that he has, they're not super great, although the way that he won, it says a lot, but, you know, fight against Gamboa.
What you were saying, like, a big part of it is because, like, Gamboa looked so inspired in those early rounds, and it was like you were really seeing, like, you know, a lot of his arsenal. He had, the hand speed, he was just out boxing, and it was the fact that Crawford was able to make the adjustment and change his style and fight the kind of fight he needed to and really get the crowd, just caught up in it. It was, that's what made it so great. I mean, it really was kind of a different side of that fighter, and we saw how he dealt with adversity. You know, we saw what it looked like when he got a little bit hurt, and it was really impressive, you know. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that I was amazed, man. I was in Las Vegas during the Crawford fight, and I ran to the Crawford-Gamboa fight, and I ran to this bar, like the one bar that was showing it, and I got there right before we're starting. And right to my left were like three guys from Omaha watching, rooting on Crawford. And there was a bunch of people at the bar that were, you know, so I mean, I think it's just, it's that part of the country, they showed that night that, like, they obviously have a thirst for something, you know, some type of, like, sports figure, hero to root for, and Crawford had a great crowd behind him. So, I mean, I think that's where the potential is that, like, now as far as can he expand from a regional guy to a real national guy, I mean, I don't know.
That's the question.
His persona,
that's exactly
the question. He's not exactly like Floyd Mayweather, you know, not in terms of, like, the evil villain persona, but even just in terms of general charisma, you know? I mean, he's a good dude. He seems like, you know, great guy.
Well, I like the guy. I like the guy.
No,
I would like for him to become a star. But, I mean, it's exactly what you're saying. You know, it's one fight in Omaha with, you know, that drew well and that wound up being exciting. Let's not get ahead of ourselves and start talking about fucking, you know, like doing a world tour and shit. I like the kid.
Well, we talked about Devin Alexander like that a few years ago in St. Louis. when he was awesome.
Exactly.
Compared him to like the 8 of the top 10 welterweights in history. I think Max Kellerman compared Devin Alexander to.
They start talking about like, you know, they get like fucking 7,000 people to an arena and they start talking about like, Chavez Haugen drew 114,000 people. Okay, dude, come on, fuck. Let's go. Look, come on, dude. You know, back in like 1954, Chicago, some random Chicago stadium, they're drawing like 19,000 for some fucking bums, you know? Like, let's not get carried away. Regardless, I do like Terrence Crawford, and I do think that there is potential there. But as far as the whole crossover thing, let's give it time. Let's let it marinate a little bit. But it's a good fight, nonetheless. I think it's a good fight, and I think that it's one we should, you know, look forward to. Two top guys.
Top
men. Now, I'll tell you who's not top men. Danny Garcia and Rod Salka.
they're not fucking top men. Those are the guys who got totally kicked off of the truck while Indy's driving and, like, the Nazis are creeping up the side of the truck. And then he, like, drives and he's, like, brushing against the trees and shit. That's Danny Garcia and Rod Salka. Those guys are assholes. Not really.
Oh, not Rod Salka. I mean,
no, it's mostly Danny Garcia.
Yeah. It's like he thinks that, like, he, you know, I mean, I know he was an underdog against Amir Khan, you know, and then a lot of people had were picking Lucas Matisse to beat him, although the odds were pretty much even, so, you know. But it's like he takes that one tough fight, and now it's like carte blanche to just never defend against anybody, one of the top guys in the division. And, I mean, Mauricio Herrera was a pretty healthy underdog going into that fight, and he's a good fighter.
Yeah.
A great fight, you know, but on the heels of that, it just seems like such a huge scale back. Like, it's like they're just so desperate for some highlight reel knockout or something. You know, because that's all that can happen from a fight like this. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but there's no reason, you know, that...
I just don't get it. I really don't get it at all, dude. Like, I mean,
wouldn't you want to have a video of yourself knocking some guy out?
I guess.
Looking
amazing.
I guess, but it's like they're doing it. If I was him and just watch that, and I'd be satisfied, and then fight a top opponent. But you know, like,
if that were me, it's not like
a great sign for, because really the opponent that they wanted Garcia to fight, and by they I kind of mean like, you know, that seemed to be the plan from Golden Boy and from the promoters and from, you know, even the boxing media was okay with it. And I wasn't even really that down with this fight, but was Lamont Peterson, who's a good fighter. Peterson is a good fighter. He's one of the top five guys at, you know, junior welterweight. You know, whatever. But even Peterson had been knocked out in, like, three rounds by the guy that Garcia just beat. So, and, you know, it wouldn't be a bad title defense because Peterson's a credible guy at 140, yeah. But, you know, Peter, he's already beaten with Khan and with Matisse, two guys who, you know, gave Peterson, I mean, either blew out Peterson or, in Khan's case, like, fought a pretty even fight with Peterson. You know, I just think Garcia should have been looking towards, like, you know, bigger fights. And
even if he's not looking towards bigger fights, though, you know, I mean, I don't...
Right.
I think that
he wouldn't even fight Peterson. Like, that was my whole point. Like, I mean, nobody was particularly clamoring for him to, you know, fight with Lamont Peterson.
But,
I mean, Peterson's good.
But it's a very
we've seen Garcia beat better guys, you know, so it's like, but he wouldn't even do that.
But at the very least, if he's not going to be looking towards really big fights or whatever, he is the champion at 140 pounds. Even if you don't want to, like, look at lineage or any of that type of shit, that's okay, but... You know, I would have to say that he's fairly clearly the best fighter at 140 pounds right now. And at the very least, he could be defending that claim against somebody credible, totally not doing
credible
at all, even remotely. So,
Peterson,
you know,
would have been,
at the end of the day,
To need a tune-up fight to fight a guy. Look, I mean, Garcia just fought Herrera. He was pretty, you know, I'm not lucky. I mean, I had Garcia winning closely, but, you know, had the politics been different and Herrera was the A side, of course, you know, the fight would have turned, you know, Herrera would have gotten the decision. I mean, it was a close fight. Garcia was on the right end of it, you know. Coming off of that, to not even be willing to fight a guy like Peterson, who you've already had two mutual opponents looked a lot better than, you know, or at least got better results, to me, I don't know what it means. I mean, maybe it's just like he's just, at this point, he knows he's maybe got a Mayweather fight on the table sometime down the road, and he's really trying to preserve it. I mean, it's not unthinkable that a guy like Peterson could theoretically outbox Garcia and get a decision. I don't know. I don't know what to say, but yeah, this fight, it's not good, and it would have been nice if somebody had a backbone at Showtime and refuse to air it and use their money to, you know, buy something else, but that's not the world that we live in.
Yeah, I still just don't even really understand exactly what the aim is, because they're doing it pretty blatantly. And I mean, at the end of the day, dude, like, it just, you know, even if the aim is to, like, have Danny Garcia in the main event and then to have Lamont Peterson
in the co-main or whatever. Dude, this fight doesn't need build-up. That fight doesn't need to be marinated.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, like, this is so what
they're doing. I mean, I have no idea. They're, like, ignoring the fact that Garcia has already beaten Matisse and Khan and is regarded as, like, the, you know, number one lineal champion at 140. They're treating it like it's, like, two guys on the same level kind of building toward this, like, super fight. Well, that's not what it is, you know? I mean, it's not inconceivable that Peterson can beat Garcia, like I said. But no, it's not.
It's like a respectable title defense.
Asked for. Yeah, it's just it would be a run-of-the-mill title defense, and not even against his most dangerous opponent. I mean,
yeah,
clearly,
like,
I think most people agree. Yeah, a Matisse rematch would, I think, pose a much bigger threat than Peterson would.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if he was fighting Peterson, that's fine, but there's no reason for the fight. Salta has just, I'm happy for him that he's getting a chance, he's getting some exposure. I'm sure he'll fight the fight of his life. But there's just no indication or any reason to believe that he's anywhere even close to Danny Garcia's level. And not to mention that just on paper, he just hasn't distinguished himself as even one of the better, you know, and not even going that far. I mean, you got to go really far down on lightweight to even get to Rod Salto.
Yeah. Well, you know, so, I do have to – I'm not going to lie, dude. You know, before this was announced, I didn't know fucking anything at all about Rod Salto. I never even heard his name, not once. You know, maybe it's because I'm on the West Coast, and maybe there's, like, more news about him in the Midwest or East or whatever. I don't know. I have honestly no idea. But regardless, I will say that, you know, I guess I'll throw a little plug to the Bad Culture. It's a radio show hosted by, co-hosted by your boy Bivens there. Best
my
friend.
Acclaim. Well, formerly.
Well,
formerly bad.
Yes. Well, I mean, regardless, I was trying to make a joke. It didn't pan out well. But Rod Salka was on a radio show that he helps to co-host along with, oh my God, dude, I don't even know why I'm totally, like, drawing a blank right now. But there are a handful of folks, Brandon Stubbs and fuck, I can't remember her name. I'm an asshole. Anyway, he did an interview on their podcast, and it was really good. I was actually really surprised by how well her name is Giandra LeBeouf, and her Twitter handle is JETHANG, JE Thang or something. Anyway, point is, he was a guest on the radio show, and I was actually really surprised by how, I don't want to say eloquent, but just how well-spoken he came across. I was like, damn, you know, he seems to really understand, like, his role here. He seems to be coming in here, and he's not really saying shit like, oh, I'm going to knock him out, I'm going to blah, 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 I'm going to do this, I'm going to be the new champion of the world. He's basically coming in and saying, well, they pretty much chose me as an easy mark. And so I'm going to do everything I can to, like, you know, not be an easy mark. And I respect that.
Yeah,
I have
great.
To say that, like, you know,
everybody's going to be rooting for the guy, but, you know, you also just have to be realistic about what's likely to transpire,
yes.
You know, and it's like.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And, I mean, in any event, that was, like, a long-winded way of me, like, you know, trying to give some props to, you know, somebody I like, but regardless. But yeah, it's the end of the day, dude. This shit's kind of a fucking travesty because what they're doing is instead of really trying to build up a rematch between Danny Garcia and Lucas Matisse or something like that, what they're doing is they're basically splitting them up and aiming them towards other guys who I think that maybe potentially for them they see as having a shelf life. And like in Adrian Broner, I know that might sound ludicrous, but, you know, they're splitting up Garcia and Matisse, but then, like, instead of just matching them right away and doing some type of like, tournament, they're, like, drawing this shit out by having them, like, co-featured on, like, respective cards, which they may or may not fight, you know, after that. It's fucking ridiculous, dude. And it's lame.
What I saw was that just Garcia was not ready to fight Peterson right now. He asked for a different opponent, obviously a lower caliber opponent. That's what I read. So, you know, I think you have to question Team Garcia here. I mean, I think they were in position to get the Mayweather fight after the Canelo card. And again, I read that, you know, they didn't want it yet. And that made more sense. But, you know, now to say we're not ready for the Peterson fight. I don't know. It's just, you know, Danny Garcia is the light heavyweight or the light welterweight champion of the world, and you know the guy fights twice a year. It's not that unreasonable to say, hey, fucko, fight Peterson. You know, like it's not that tough of a fight. I mean, it's not like we're asking him to go fight, you know, any of the top welterweights or anything like that. It's just make a defense against a top guy.
Yeah, well, just, you know, a top man. Fight top man.
6 times a year, yeah, you know, then, and it's no disrespect to Salka. I mean, you got to take advantage of the opportunities you get. It's great that now he's on a platform like this and he's fighting Garcia. I mean, he has nothing to lose. We all expect he's going to get outboxed and knocked out. So if he just even makes it an interesting fight, who knows? But I do think it speaks more to Garcia and whatever happens in this fight, you know, and it's just a predetermined outcome that maybe like they think they can make, you know.
Well, you brought up the rightfully brought up the Herrera fight earlier, and I mean, yeah, looking at that fight is like the perfect. It's like the prime example of like, dude, you know, Garcia has basically fought himself into a corner at this point, because you know here we are and we're like, all right, well, you know, it seems as though Matisse is pretty much working his way back towards a rematch with Garcia because he feels embarrassed, or at least that's the way it seems. It seems as though Matisse wants that rematch and blah, blah, blah. So we're like, all right, what are we going to have to do to get that rematch to happen? Like, what steps do we have to take? And so, okay, whatever. But then there's some type of fumble or foul-up as Garcia seriously struggles and in the eyes of many, including myself, loses to Mauricio Herrera. And so we're like, all right, well, now where the fuck do we go? Now we got to build towards a Herrera rematch before we even get to the fucking Matisse rematch. Wait a second. No, let's fucking fight some other dude named Rod Salka that nobody's ever heard of. This line of thinking just doesn't really make any sense to me. I mean, it makes sense from a money-making perspective, from a, like, fuck you fans perspective, but what? Come on, man. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it makes sense for Garcia to just take a bunch of money to fight a guy who's not even in the top 20 at lightweight. And,
yeah, it just doesn't make any sense, dude.
But no, I mean, you're right, it doesn't, it's another situation where so many of these guys, like, you know, Danny Garcia finally gets, you know, validation when he beats Matisse and was just really riding that high, and now he has, you know, I don't fault him for the Herrera fight, but yeah, taking this is just, it's not a great look.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to ask, is it possible that Angel Garcia, is that guy the Antichrist?
I love Angel.
That guy is a lunatic, man.
To be honest, man.
That guy is a certified lunatic.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't hear me say that.
Awesome.
I hope he doesn't listen to the show.
I don't doubt it.
I highly doubt it, too, but I just hope he does.
I don't know. I'd be more worried about Teddy coming after you with his gat.
What the fuck, dude? Against who? Yeah, he's scary.
I love Angel Garcia's, like, racial rhetoric before every fight and making it about America versus terrorists and, you know, South Americans and stuff. I think it's great. I think it's good for the sport.
He's crazy, man. He's crazy. He's legitimately crazy. I want you to know that. So, in any event, I'm scared now. That's right. Lamont Peterson. That's what we were just talking about. So, Lamont Peterson is fighting, and of course, the co-feature of the Garcia Salka card. He's fighting Edgar Santana.
Who's another lightweight coming off of a couple losses, right?
Yes. Well, he's not coming off a couple losses, but he had a few fights ago.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah, he got losses. He got losses, homie.
I'm not saying that's bad, but has he beaten anyone good since the losses? I mean, that's the thing what I'm getting at here.
No. And he is, I think, either 35 or... Well, he's 35 or 36... Basically when he had really started getting going, like as a pro, was in, I want to say like 2004, 2005.
he's been on Showbox, I want to say, a couple times. You know, he's a fighter that – well, he's – I don't know. I just know that he was a fighter that, like, years ago was looked at as, like, you know, a potential prospect. But this was, like, 10 years ago. And then he, like, totally, like, fell off the map for a while. And in the last few years is fighting again, but has a loss or two. So I don't really understand how this is. Then, dude, I totally even forgot about this, but Lamont Peterson has a belt. Lamont Peterson has that IBF belt. And so when I looked, I was like, really? He does? Damn. And so on top of that, it's like, wait a second. This is a fucking defense? Really?
Well, I mean, you look at this card, like, and if you really wanted to put, like, Santana and Salka on the airwaves, wouldn't it make more sense to have them fight each other and have Garcia and Peterson fight? Like, they're not even the same division.
I was literally just thinking that. Yeah. Why not have Garcia Peterson and then Salka fucking, yeah.
They probably will in fucking 4 months.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense, man, for me that this is happening. What was Peterson's last fight? I can't remember. He looked decent, though.
It was earlier this year. Deary John. It was like in January.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Peterson looked good in that fight.
He did look pretty solid, but I mean, it was against a guy that was not super well enough.
Nobody would raise a stink about Garcia fighting Peterson, but the fact that, like, that's what we're, you know, not get, like, that's what we're building toward, and we're not going to even get that, and that's, like, not that great. I mean, nobody's getting, like, super hyped up about Garcia and Peterson, are they?
Right. No. It doesn't need build-up.
No.
It doesn't need any
build-up. Yeah, the card, it's obviously, like, it's just, like, they're just doing a favor, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand what the fuck they're doing.
Buy this as a good card. I mean, they were told that that's what they were going to put on this time spot. So that's what they're doing. I mean, remember, we haven't seen a non-Golden Boy on the main Showtime. You know, we haven't seen a non-Golden Boy card in, what, like a year? I mean, ever since Golden Boy left HBO. Every Showtime main event has been fighted by Golden Boy. So they're doing, you know, they're going to put what they tell them to put, apparently, but I think that there'd be higher standards for Danny Garcia, and, you know, just if he does just kind of outclass and, you know, get a knockout or whatever, like, what does that do for him?
Well, I might surprise
him. Real quick, dude, people compared it to Caporello and Kovalev or whatever. Like, oh, Caporello wasn't – yeah, it was a mismatch too. But Caporello had a couple wins against somebody credible, and he never lost. So, I mean, like, Salka, you look at his record, it's just not – it's not befitting of somebody who's going to – I know it's not – and then the other thing is it's not even a title fight because it's at, like, 142.
Yeah, that's pretty weak. That's pretty weak to, like, basically lure – or, you know, I don't really – I can't confirm that this is what's happened. And, you know, Salka probably wouldn't either for fear of losing the payday or some shit, but it sounds to me like they basically lured Salka in, not that he would necessarily need to be lured, but with the promise of, like, a, you know, title fight, and then basically just bait and switched, because they were indeed advertising it as a fight for the title for a bit, and then it just kind of out of nowhere disintegrated. That's pretty weak.
Why wouldn't it be? Like, why does the fucking junior welterweight champion need a 2 pound above limit catch weight against the guy moving up from 135?
Defend your fucking belt. I mean, fuck. Yeah,
well,
it doesn't make any sense.
If the one in a million shot and Salka actually wins the fight, I'm gonna love it when, like, all the organizations are, like, refuse to see Salka as the lineal champion. Like, I'm not talking about the alphabet belts, but they'll say, like, oh, Garcia never lost at 140. You know, so he's still the lineal champion.
Well, I mean, I think that you can kind of, like,
you got to use common sense, man. I don't give a shit. I mean,
I don't disagree with you.
You know, I'm going to consider Salka the lineal champion if he beats Garcia. I don't care if it's at 142.
Well, I mean, I don't totally disagree with you, but I think that you can still regard Garcia as the champion at that point, but, like, a champion but a fucking asshole. You know, like, if I were Garcia,
I'm gonna
I would be
him
like
every all of the above except champion.
Well, if it's at 140 pounds, well, you know, it's an argument that obviously, you know, we're on different, like, sides of the fence here, although, you know, morally the same. But, I mean, yeah,
well,
it's a stupid situation.
Break me morally.
Yeah, well, morally, ethically, you know, whatever.
In a normal situation, like, okay, I respect, like, go above the catch weight or whatever, but, I don't know, man. It's just like, you know, because he's insisting
in my opinion, it was a shitty situation that
was probably created by, I don't know if fucking Danny Garcia is actually, like, you know, like, scared of anybody. I doubt that he's scared of anyone, but it's pretty clear that, you know, he's okay with taking this fight. So I think that he obviously deserves some measure of, you know, anger or whatever here. But also, we have to look at Showtime and the promoter for, like, actually putting this fight on with a straight face and, you know, adding to this card like it's some legitimate card, because it's not really. So there's kind of some blame to go around here, you know, and we haven't even gotten to the whole...
It went all in. Just how terrible this card is. You know, it's like they didn't even try to make a good undercard. I mean, they just put, like, I mean, yeah, the Jacobs fight is okay, but...
Yeah, and I kind of agree with Corey Erdman there that it's, like, at least kind of interesting, the Jacobs-Fletcher fight, but it's not really the caliber of fight that I'm really, you know, like, looking forward to. I mean, you know, it's only interesting because Danny Jacobs hasn't faced anybody worthwhile in his comeback. That's the only reason why it's interesting at all. So, you know, when you're looking at that opener there and it's like, oh, this is interesting, when it's, like, not objectively an interesting fight, that tells you how crappy the rest of the card is. So, and yeah, that's kind of how it was with this last weekend's card, too, where we were looking at this like, ah, well, maybe we'll get a knockout. You know, it's frustrating, and I'm hoping that towards the end of the year it starts changing.
It's pretty terrible. I mean, it's historically bad. But, you know, if we get, like you said, we might get some stuff late in the year. I mean, Hopkins-Kovalev's a really, really good fight. It is kind of brutal, though, when we look at the schedule. It's like, the best fight involves 49-year-old Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah.
But,
no,
you know,
shit.
If they
make
Chavez here for January, if Frost
with
and
what,
Chavez happens, if Carl Frost and Chavez Jr. happens in January, I'll just be so hyped for that, I won't even care what happens in between.
And you know what, this is probably my boner for Golovkin showing a little bit here, but if Frost and Chavez Jr. wind up waging war and winds up being a classic, which many of us think it may be because they're both kind of like, you know, badasses who take punches and throw punches, then how does that make Golovkin look, that he was basically trying to go after both of them and has sparred with one of them and apparently did really well?
Well, it makes a great opponent for him beyond that. You know, I need Golovkin at ringside on that one.
Yeah, it makes a great erection for me in the meantime, I'll tell you that much.
Yep. Yeah, I want to charge the ring and get on there and tell them to call them if they want an amazing show.
You want show? You want the amazing show? Love it. Oh, man, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was. Unfortunately, man, this year it's been more of a comedy than the actual fights that we can, we've been glorifying, you know? I mean, most of the the best real, like, big fight was probably Floyd and Maidana in terms of, like, the action, you know? I mean, I thought Bradley Pacquiao, too, was great for about 5 or 6 rounds. And then, maybe Gamboa and Crawford is a little lower level than that, but a better fight overall. So, but, yeah, it's kind of thin here, man.
Matisse Molina was fun stuff, but it was not really on that type of level.
Yeah, it was a great fight, but if that's fight of the year, I mean, that's a pretty bad year, you know, because for the most part...
That was not.
Yeah, I actually think I liked Crawford and Gamboa better, but again, it's still a lot far beneath most, like, actual fight of the year winners.
Yeah. Well, we got like 30 seconds left, so we're going to close this shit down.
Thanks, bro.
Thanks. everybody, Mr. Foley in particular. Thanks to Corey Urban for joining us once again. Of course, he was great. But thanks everyone who tuned in. We obviously appreciate it. We will be back probably next week, I'm guessing. Foley and I will have to talk about it after this epic Garcia Salca weekend, but we'll probably be back. Check out my stuff, QueensberryRules.com, Foley's stuff, BadLeftHook.com. See everybody next week. Take it easy.